So, what is the scuttlebutt around your water cooler these days? Any good rumors about who the boss is sleeping with? Or maybe you're talking about something you heard about one of the presidential candidates these days. Plenty of rumors are flying around about them. Why do we believe rumors? Why do we spread rumors? And why does it matter? We'll find out this hour. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday, September the 12th. Happy to welcome in our guest who has written a book about rumors. Nicholas DeFanzo is a professor of psychology at Rochester Institute of Technology. He has published numerous articles on the topic of rumor, and he is co-author of Rumor Psychology. He's also the author of the new book, The Water Cooler Effect: A Psychologist Explores the Extraordinary Power of Rumors. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So why do you say rumors are so powerful?
Rumors have a wide and very potent number of effects in all aspects of life, because that's what people often do. We are in a state of uncertainty going through our lives. We like to talk with other people and make sense of things together, and that's what rumor is. It's social sense-making at its best. So the consequent thoughts that we come up with as a collective are very important for then determining our behavior, what we decide to do, how we decide to go about our daily lives, decisions we make, votes that we cast, and so forth.
Yeah. What's the difference between rumor and gossip?
Rumor is an unverified bit of information that's circulating among people, often trying to just simply make sense of an unclear situation or ward off a potential threat. So the classic example of rumor is, hey, I heard that the department is downsizing. What have you heard? Gossip, on the other hand, is evaluative social chat, usually about somebody who's not present. Usually it's of a personal or individual private nature. It might be titillating, it might be entertaining. Gossip has a much more social network building sort of function. You gossip with people that you want to be friends with. You don't gossip with your enemies. And gossip also often has a political sort of character to it, in that you're trying to get close with the person you're gossiping with and perhaps divide off someone who's the target of gossip. So the classic bit of gossip would be, hey, have you heard about John's escapades at the Christmas party the other night? He put a lampshade on his head. Wasn't that, and then if the person is in favor of his behavior, says, wasn't that great? Or if the person thinks what he did was poor, they say, oh, wasn't that awful? And that's the classic bit of gossip.
Yeah. So are we talking in your book about rumors versus gossip, or are they lumped in together?
We're mostly talking about rumor in my book, but oftentimes it's hard to tell the two apart, and the principles that we apply to rumor can often be applied to gossip successfully. So sometimes there are just nebulous forms, as when we might gossip about our boss, but it's really important, so it's rumor. And sometimes it's very difficult to tell the two apart.
Yeah. What's the difference between gossip, rumor, and urban legends, or those things we get in our email all the time?
Well, urban legends are narratives. They're good stories that are told. They have a whole story structure, a setting, a plot. They mount to a climax, usually, and then they have a denouement, and usually a moral to the story. So an example of an urban legend would be, these tourists were in Australia. They were riding along in a jeep, and they struck a kangaroo. They got out of the car, and they thought, what a good picture it would make if we put my jacket over the kangaroo. So the driver put his jacket over the kangaroo's shoulder and snapped a photo to it, at which point the kangaroo regained, had just been stunned, and got up and hopped away, jacket, wallet, and all. And so the moral of the story is to be kind to animals. So that's an example of entertaining.
I haven't heard that one. I thought I heard them all. But, you know, I did have my sister-in-law sent me one of those mass emails saying, I don't know, women were being poisoned by a spider bite all over Florida, and warning, watch out for spiders that are going to be in under your toilet seat and this kind of thing. And I don't know if she really, I guess she believed it and wanted to warn me about this.
Sure, she was concerned about your welfare. Those are part of a class of urban legends called bosom serpent urban legends, where they express an anxiety about little creepy things crawling around that we can't see or control or possibly getting under our skin and invading our bodies.
Yeah, but are rumors always false, or are sometimes rumors true?
Rumors can be false or true. The key feature of rumor is that it's just simply unverified. So even though it may be passed along as though it were true, as though it were a fact, it might be believed by your local circle of friends, it may indeed be unverified, and there may be doubt associated with it. Hence, it is a rumor.
Our guest is Nicholas DeFonso. He is author of The Water Cooler Effect. A psychologist explores the extraordinary power of rumors. We welcome your thoughts and questions about rumors. Why do we believe them? Why do we spread them? Why won't we retract them? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday, September the 12th. Coming up later today, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. Nearly 40 million adults in America today suffer from anxiety, but it doesn't have to dominate one's life, according to Ben's guest, after 5 o'clock. So talk about anxiety after 5. We're talking about rumors during this hour, and the power of rumors. Wondering why we are so quick to believe rumors and why rumors are sometimes so tough to squelch. Have you an example of this? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is a professor of psychology at Rochester Institute of Technology, Nicholas DeFonso. He is the author of The Water Cooler Effect, A Psychologist Explores the Extraordinary Power of Rumors. And Professor DeFonso, how did you get involved or interested in this subject of rumors?
I've been interested in rumors for about 16 years because of the question of accuracy. I've noticed that some rumors get to be very accurate over time, and you can really count on them. But in other situations, rumors are abysmally off the mark, and people are terrible at figuring out the facts. And this has always intrigued me. It's a descendant of a philosophical sort of question. It's called epistemology. How do we know that what we know is true is actually true? And rumor is one of the ways that people try and figure out what the facts are, trying to make sense of their worlds and move forward. That's part of the reason why I wrote this book, was to help people be better rumor consumers, to be a little more discerning, maybe give people the benefit of the doubt a little more, and to be able to handle the many rumors that are flying around a little more effectively.
Yeah. Why is it, using a current example from the presidential campaign trail, that even though there have been numerous news stories debunking it, that some people still believe that Barack Obama is a Muslim?
There are several reasons. One is that lots of these people don't trust the news media. A recent Harris poll found that a significant portion of the population is losing faith in the news media. So whenever the formal sources of information are distrusted or are thought to be uncredible, you're going to find people relying on rumor. This happened in the Soviet Union before the fall of communism, where the state handled the press, and nobody trusted the press. And you had citizens that relied on primarily on rumor. I fear that that we might be headed in that direction. That's what the polls show. The other reason is that there are echo chambers going on. In the blogosphere, conservative weblogs are linked overwhelmingly to other conservative weblogs, and liberal weblogs are linked overwhelmingly to other liberal weblogs. So it's as though these rumors are circulating in their own echo chambers, and there's very few cross connections. Mm-hmm. But when we find places on the internet or face-to-face where there's active discussion of a topic among people who want to ferret out the facts, get at the truth, and there's a diversity of opinion, we find a better opportunity for an accurate rumor to emerge.
Yeah. We also have the rumors that were being spread by liberal bloggers just in the past week or so that about the parentage of Sarah Palin's youngest child, the infant with Down syndrome, all these stories that this baby really wasn't hers. How does something like that get started?
Yeah, that's a good question, isn't it, Joy? It's either that it was started purposely by a very crafty storyteller for perhaps political or strategic intent or purposes. That's quite possible, of course. I don't know of any smoking guns. Or it was started accidentally. People are capitalizing upon some uncertainties. Governor Palin apparently looked rather unpregnant until late in her pregnancy, and then after her pregnancy went right back on the job. That's fairly unusual, atypical, and so a rumor about her actually not having the baby, false rumor about her actually not having trig, capitalized upon that uncertainty in just the same way that the false rumor that Obama is a Muslim capitalizes upon a slight uncertainty about the fact that his middle name is a common Arabic, or common Islamic name, Hussein. Mm-hmm. So these rumors capitalize upon, they take advantage of, if you will, some uncertainties that may exist initially or in the minds of people who hear them.
Let's go to the phones. John is with us in Whitewater. Hi, John. John, are you there? Well, I'm sorry that we lost John. He must have been on a cell phone. He wanted to talk about a similar topic here, how social networking has expanded rumors. I'm assuming he's thinking of the internet and Facebook and things like that.
Right. So we're way more connected than we ever were. At least we're connected less geographical bounded connections than we were before. So how has the internet affected the rumor mill? And one answer is that it has enabled rumors to travel much more quickly and far more widely than they ever were before. I can spread that Australian rumor to somebody I know in Australia instantly, and these rumors can spread exponentially among people. By the same token, the internet and social networking have enabled rebuttals about these rumors to occur as well, almost as quickly. So it's as though there are two forces at work, forces for spreading these rumors and forces, sort of antibodies to these rumors as well. Social networking can speed up the process, but it can also offer can also speed up the antibody process, as it were.
Yeah, you had an interesting section in the book where you talked about how people are so are not that willing to retract a rumor once they find out what they were saying is inaccurate, not spreading the word that they were wrong.
Yeah, it's embarrassing to say, hey, I was wrong in what I sent to you before. I didn't check my facts. Sorry about that. And it points at the fact that sharing a rumor or passing information along is a social act, after all. It's not just a private thought or an attitude that you hold to yourself. It's something that we do with other people. And so it has social ramifications. You may like or not like me better if I share with you a rumor. I may share something unpleasant for you to hear, for example, and that will diminish the strength of our relationship. And so because rumor is this social act, it's difficult to share things that are embarrassing to you and me, such as a retraction.
Mm-hmm. You told people a rumor, an untrue story, but then told them right away that it was untrue, and they were like disappointed.
Right. Mm-hmm. It was one of my first experiences as a killjoy. Actually, I interviewed everybody in the psychology building at my graduate school about a rumor that had been spread to everyone in their mailboxes, and I had found out that the rumor was false by checking on the facts. And it was disappointing to them. They really didn't appreciate me enlightening them that this rumor was false. They really wanted me to commiserate with them. The rumor was about the headlights hoax. It was really an urban legend, and that is, this was a false rumor that somewhere in Illinois, if you saw a vehicle in the opposite lane of traffic that did not have their headlights on, don't blink at them, because as part of a new gang initiation rite, they would turn around and follow you to your destination and kill you.
Oh,
and I found out by calling the Illinois State Police Department that this was a false rumor. A poor trooper got on the phone and said, "Is this the headlights hoax? It's false. We never put out that memo. It was a false flyer going around the country." So I would tell people this, that it was false, and they were kind of disappointed. They really wanted me to say something like, oh, isn't it terrible what gangs do, and you can't feel safe anymore, and it's just awful the way things are. Instead, I told them, well, it really is false, and they were kind of embarrassed that they had passed the rumor along.
We will talk more about rumors and the power of rumors, why we believe them, why we spread them, why we won't retract them, after we check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with the author of the new book, The Water Cooler Effect, a psychologist explores the extraordinary power of rumors. Nicholas DeFonso is a psychologist, a professor of psychology at Rochester Institute of Technology. Our number, if you have a rumor that you would like to spread, if you have a question that you would like to ask about rumors, or maybe an example of a rumor that you'd like to ask our guest about, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about rumors this hour, and the rumors that we hear through the grapevine or around the water cooler. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's now 6:36 on this Friday, September the 12th. We're talking with the author of the new book, The Water Cooler Effect, A Psychologist Explores the Extraordinary Power of Rumors. Nicholas DeFonso is a professor of psychology at Rochester Institute of Technology. He has published numerous articles on the topic of rumor, and he is also the co-author of Rumor Psychology. We're talking about the power of rumors, the psychology of rumors, why rumors spread so quickly, why rumors can be so hard to squelch. And we're wondering what you do if presented with a tidbit of information, a rumor. What do you do? Do you believe it? Do you research it? Do you talk with others about this? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email, talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. I wanted Professor DeFonso to talk a little bit more about the water cooler effect. We don't have an actual water cooler at Wisconsin Public Radio, but I suppose here we're talking about the kitchen where we have the vending machines and the coffee pot, and sometimes people are gabbing while they're waiting for their pastry to microwave.
That's right. A coffee pot will do. Any place where people gather informally is the place where hearsay gets passed and information gets channeled differently than in the formal communication network. And so those scuttlebutts, those water coolers, those coffee pots, the backyard fence, these are places where this informal hearsay occurs and rumor flourishes.
Yeah, and you're not in the book talking exclusively about workplace rumors and gossip. This is about all areas of our lives.
That's right, by no means. Rumor is really all-encompassing: work, family, hobbies, government, politics. It really affects and infiltrates all domains.
Just as an aside, one of the first things I learned reading your book was the meaning of scuttlebutt. I thought that was gossip, but it's actually a noun. It's a thing.
That's right. Herman Melville, in his novel White Jacket, sailed this Navy frigate, and the scuttlebutt was essentially the water fountain in the middle of this old-time sailing vessel. And imagine 500 men, they were all men, on this Navy frigate. And that's where the informal communication occurred. You'd go to the scuttlebutt, which was this big cask in the middle of the ship, and it was connected to these vast reservoirs of water in the holds of the ship. And people would talk amongst one another, and news would travel quickly.
Yeah. Our lines are now all full. We'll go to the phones in just a moment. But I did want to talk a little bit more about why this matters. Why should we care about the power of rumors?
Well, we should care because, one, rumors are powerful. They can affect our behavior, and they can affect mass behavior as well. And they can also change attitudes. They can legitimate distasteful or prejudicial attitudes that we have, or they can bias us in ways that we're really unaware of. So we should care very much. But secondly, it's just that people want to, I think, really know the facts, or really should want to know the facts. And there's a social norm, and it's the right thing to do to really get at what the truth is. So rumor is one way that people try to make sense of the world. And as I said before, my hope is that if we learn how to do it better, if we learn a little bit more about how rumors really operate, we'll be a little bit better equipped to do that good sense-making in a more beneficial and effective way.
Yeah. Okay. Just to pursue that a little bit, let's say we're at the water cooler and someone says, "Hey, did you hear that this office is closing? They're going to close this office." And mm-hmm. So what do I do then?
Okay. So that's a good example of an important rumor that's potentially threatening, and you say, "Wow, I didn't hear that. Where did you hear that? Why do you say that? This is what I heard. Let's compare notes. Let's go to a source that we might know of that might be able to verify it or falsify it, and let's find out if it's true or false. Let's check rather than just simply spread it around and have us all be worried."
Yeah, and I would assume if I go to my boss says, I don't know what you're talking about, and I haven't heard anything, and looks kind of shifty, that's going to make me want to spread that rumor more, or wonder more.
Well, if the boss looks a little shifty and mm-hmm. you have reason from past behaviors not to be able to trust your boss, then by all means, it seems less likely that he's telling you the truth. Or sometimes he just simply doesn't know mm-hmm. or he can't know what the facts are. And in that case, have no fear. The rumor mill in an organization is very effective at quickly ferreting out the facts in those sorts of situations. Somebody will leak the information, and it will get around quickly. And I would put money on that. Those organizational rumors exist in densely connected networks. There are lots of people in those networks that know what they're talking about. There are lots of people close to the information source, and people are often willing to leak. So often those organizational rumors are very accurate.
An email from Zan in Appleton. Do you look at rumors historically, too? I wonder if they were less prevalent when people were more rural and had fewer means of communications. Do you have examples of historical rumors?
Yeah, so I don't look at... That's a hard question to look at because rumors are a hard thing to study. How do you study something that's difficult to record? It's especially much easier to study them now because so many rumors are on the internet and they're archived automatically, so to speak. But rumors have been talked about since ancient times, and leaders and politicians and poets have talked about their power and how quickly they fly and so forth. I don't have an empirically buttressed answer to that very good question from Zan because we don't have any measure of how widespread they were in ancient times. We simply know that rumors were something and are something that people depend upon heavily as they try to figure out their world.
Eugene in Viola is with us. Hi, Eugene. You're on the air.
Good morning. Good morning. When I was teaching, I used to, once in a great while, I'd write a statement down on a piece of paper, like all green tomatoes are square. I would start it at one row, and I'd have them whisper that to each other student going down one row and up the other. And you never knew how it'd come out, and what I would point out to the students, now these are fifth and sixth graders, I'd point out to them how dangerous and how damaging rumors can be when you're talking about somebody else or you get something started like that.
Yeah, it's the old telephone line game.
Yep.
Yeah.
We also call that the whisper down the lane, and that's actually one of the ways that early rumor researchers studied distortion in rumor transmission. And it really tells us a lot about why rumors do get distorted as we pass them along, or they can get distorted as we pass them along. And it has to do with the limits of memory and the limits of attention. We're not tape recorders, and so passing something along, it does get distorted. On the other hand, in real-life rumor situation, it's quite a different paradigm. We typically don't share it with one person with no discussion, and they share it with another person with no discussion, and so on down a chain. Typically, it's more of a back-and-forth discussion. Oh, I heard that there's a layoff going on. What have you heard? Oh, I don't know. Does that make sense? How can this possibly be? Didn't we just have a good, profitable quarter? And so on and so forth. Let's go check with the boss. We get back with the boss. And it's this tumble of very complex interchanges and opinions and prognostications that occurs, and that community or collective effort, if the motive is to ferret out the facts, and if people have half a chance at figuring out the facts, usually results in a more accurate rumor than in a more distorted rumor.
Thanks, Eugene, for the call and the example. We are talking with Nicholas DeFonso. He is author of The Water Cooler Effect, A Psychologist Explores the Extraordinary Power of Rumors. And that's what we're talking about, the power of rumors. And welcoming your examples, welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, 12 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Friday, September the 12th. Coming up after 7, I'll talk with former Wisconsin Lieutenant Governor Margaret Farrow. She is a member of the Palin Truth Squad. We'll talk about whether the media are giving Sarah Palin a fair shake, and we'll talk about Sarah Palin's interview last night on ABC, her first one since becoming the Republican vice presidential nominee. That's coming up after 7 o'clock. Then remember, it's our week in review after 8 o'clock this morning, every Friday after 8. We're talking about rumors this hour. Our guest is a psychologist who has researched the anatomy of rumors, about what happens around the world's water coolers, why we discuss rumors, why we believe them, why we spread them. Our guest is Nicholas DeFonso, his book, The Water Cooler Effect. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you have a question about rumors. Maybe you even have an example of a rumor. Maybe it turned out to be true. Maybe not. We'd love to hear from you. Here's an email from Susie in De Pere. As an advanced calculus student at UW-Stevens Point, we used calculus and topological techniques to determine that just under 75% of a given population will hear a rumor before it dies. We defined the death of a rumor as a person having heard the same rumor three times. At that point, we surmise that a person would be much less likely to repeat it. Were we making a sound assumption? Wow, Susie sounds pretty smart, Professor DeFonso.
Susie is a mathematician, and what she means by topological is the shape of the landscape. So we talk about, in geographical terms, the shape of landscape is its topology, whether it's mountainous or flat. In the same way, you can look at social networks that way. If there are many dense connections, if everyone in a local village knows one another, we say it's very densely connected. And the pattern or the arrangement of those connections is called its topology. And there has been a raft of mathematical efforts to model rumor transmission. Most of this work, and Susie is great for asking this kind of a question, most of this work makes assumptions you have to in these mathematical models and makes decisions about how the rumor will be transmitted, the probability of the rumor being transmitted from one node to another, or they might look at it as a whole system and be able to use partial differential equation techniques. And so the question is a good one. I'm afraid it's a little too complex to answer quickly over the phone. Susie, if you email me, I'll be happy to respond to that specific mathematical question.
Yeah, I assume if she does an internet search of your book that there'd be a contact for you, or do you want to give it over the air?
Oh, sure. My website is professornick.com. Professornick.com.
When does a rumor die?
Yeah, so there's two ways to answer that question. One is, what do we mean by dying? It does mean that everyone doesn't believe it, nobody talks about it anymore, or does it mean that it just kind of goes away? Rumors typically never go away. And I should say, however, that we don't really have a good answer for that question. I'm currently trying to collect rumors and try and figure out what's the typical pattern of their life history. I have been introduced to situations where we see rumor activity spikes to a peak, and then it comes down, then it goes back up again, not quite to the peak, and then it goes back down, and it goes back up again, not as high as it did the second time, and then it kind of levels out, but it never quite goes away. It's like a virus in the population that never quite goes away, and if it happens upon a group of people that aren't protected by antibodies, then there's another spike in the epidemic. I have seen that pattern before, but we really don't know at this point if that's the standard pattern by which rumors follow. And as I said, I'm trying to collect data right now to address that question.
Next, we go to Lynette in Madison. Hi, Lynette.
Good morning. Earlier this week, I hope I can articulate this. I'm so tired. But a group of women in the neighborhood that I live in. We all email to each other on one Yahoo website. And earlier this week, this woman emailed a list of all these books supposedly had been banned by Sarah Palin. And it started, you know, so it was kind of like a rumor of all these books she had banned up in Alaska. And several women responded to that, and it got to be very informational in the sense of if something is supposedly rumored, how do you go on different websites to find out what's fact or fiction? And so what I learned from that whole thing was, because I would have just read it probably and went on with my day and thought, wow, she banned all these books, and there was probably a list of 25. But I learned several different websites to go on to find out what is actually true and, right. And really good sources to look deeper into situations or rumors.
Yeah, factcheck.org is one of those, and I know FactCheck has dispelled that rumor that she banned all of those
mm-hmm.
books.
And also the League of Women Voters, mm-hmm. that is supposed to be a really good website that they kind of ask candidates questions and have them, they ask all of them the same question and have them write the answer versus speaking it. And so therefore kind of, they can't skirt around certain issues. So mm-hmm. I have to check that one out as well. But it was a very good learning experience.
Yeah. A comment, Professor DeFonso?
Great work, Lynette. Factcheck.org is good. Snopes.com is very popular. Truthorfiction.com is also very good. And AboutUrbanLegends.com are all very good. What I like about these sites is that they spend their days investigating these rumors, and they provide the backup information for their conclusions. And what's interesting about Lynette's experience is that she had a discussion, and probably there's a diverse set of people in her group, and they cared about the facts, regardless of whatever their political persuasion is. They cared about the facts, and so they had that discussion of about this false rumor that Sarah Palin banned these books, some of which hadn't been published at the time that she was supposed to have been banning them, like Harry Potter.
That's right. That's right. Al in Delafield is next. Hi, Al.
Hey, yeah, I remember back in the Second World War, someone started a rumor that you saved those little tags off of the cigarette package, and the money would go to the soldiers in the army, and every local bar had a fishbowl where people put these things in. Hmm. And actually, there was no truth to it whatsoever, but I don't know if they were preying on the sympathy of somebody. I thought it was... It was a very bad situation. Everyone thought they were going to be helping somebody, but what a rumor.
But they're killing themselves, huh, Al?
Yeah. The money went to nobody, but it just picked up. Everyone did it. You were helping the boys.
Yeah, and those flip-tops on aluminum cans, I remember if you save these, that'll give somebody a kidney transplant or something, and they didn't always turn out to be true either. Professor DeFonso, have you heard about those?
I haven't heard about those particular the flip-top rumors, although I've heard of similar kinds of rumors where people are trying to help one another. They're motivated mm-hmm. to act collectively to help a particular individual. You get on the Internet often a forward that says if you buy this or you send an email to this company, it will benefit this poor child who needs help from surgery. And so sometimes those forwards are false. They're hoaxes, and you can go to Snopes.com and they'll check those out. But it's one of the motivations that people have is to act collectively in order to help somebody. That's really a bright spot, although misguided at times, it's a bright spot in some of the motivations that people have for spreading rumors.
Yeah. Well, I guess in the end, are rumors harmful, or is there some benefit to this water cooler effect?
Yeah. So I think sometimes they're harmful and sometimes they're really beneficial. In fact, you really can't get away from living without engaging in rumors. We really do depend upon them. I mean, think of the last time that you really didn't get the information you needed at your workplace, let's say, except through an informal conversation you had with somebody. I can think of many times where I really didn't get proper or complete instructions. You can't give complete instructions through a memo or through a procedure book. You have to kind of pick up the informal parts from people who are more experienced, they're a little more in the know, and they're not going to write all this information down. So I think rumors in that sense are really beneficial. They're also a way for the unofficial network to make sense of something. It's not a good idea only for official news sources or the news sources that are designated to be out there. It's not a good idea to place all that power in their hands. And information is power. It's good to have a little bit of an underground network that's somewhat independent and you can't control in a democracy. So those are the kind of positive points about rumor. Of course, the negative points are that lots of times no one is held accountable. And so these bad or harmful or derogatory rumors can spread willy-nilly.
We're going to leave it there. Lots to think about. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, it's been my pleasure.
Nicholas DeFonso, author of The Water Cooler Effect. Thanks to Carmen Jackson, Bill Martins, and Cynthia Schuster for producing The Hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Ideas Network.